A reading from John, chapter 11, verses 1 through 44. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent a message to Jesus, "Lord, he whom you love is ill." But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Accordingly, though Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, after having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now trying to stone you, and are you going there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Those who walk during the day do not stumble because they see the light of this world. But those who walk at night stumble because the light is not in them." After saying this, he told them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to awaken him." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will be all right." Jesus, however, had been speaking about his death, but they thought that he was referring merely to sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world." When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." And when she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary get up quickly and go out. They followed her because they thought that she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him?" But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, already there is a stench, because he has been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And Jesus looked upward and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
As anyone who's seen my office knows, I am what you might call organizationally challenged. It's not that I don't know how to stay organized, but when push comes to shove in my schedule, I prioritize spending time with people or working on some project deadline rather than keeping my office straightened out. I tell myself there will always be time for that later. As a consequence, each week adds another layer of notes and paperwork to the piles on my desk, like sediment on a river bottom. I have every good intention of coming back around to sort them, but the next week brings its own busyness, and another layer of sediment covers up the previous one. It's gotten to the point now that I have these great large piles on my desk, and they're starting to crowd out the work, the space I need to do my work. I'm trying yet another strategy to address it, but I'm tempted sometimes to just throw a sheet over it when people come in for meetings, to pretend that everything is just fine, move along, nothing to see here. I recently realized the emotional impact of this disarray on me. Javen was starting to work on our taxes last week while I was at church, but he couldn't find that most basic thing needed, a W-2 form. I could have sworn I took it home and put it in the file where it belonged. But since he didn't find it there, I became an archaeologist, sifting through all the layers on my desk. Below yellow pages of meeting notes and to-do items, beneath blue prayer request slips and white stacks of unopened church advertisements, I found it in an envelope clearly marked, "Tax information." Well, my relief at finding this essential paperwork soon drowned in a flood of self-critique. Stop me if you know how this goes. I told myself that a good pastor wouldn't be this way. Wouldn't get so swamped in the flotsam and jetsam of ministry as to lose even the most basic things, important not just to me, but also to my family. My inner voice pointed out the failings in each of those layers as I sunk into the deadly quicksand of shame and blame and hiding from myself. In the words of St. Augustine, when he was describing his own state of overwhelm, I had become to myself a vast problem. I'm not laying this out there either to elicit your sympathy or your best advice for organizing. Okay? Rather, I name it because I suspect that we all have things of which we're ashamed. Things that we want to hide under a shroud. Things that make us want to crawl into a hole or disappear. Are there situations in your life that feel this sort of deadly? When I put a picture of this Lazarus story from the Children's Bible on Facebook this morning, an acquaintance mentioned that it reminded him of his alcoholism and the way that is a death-dealing illness. For someone else, it might be another addiction too embarrassing to name. Perhaps it's mental illness, or encroaching physical weakness that has you hiding from yourself. Maybe it's dysfunction at home, or children who don't fit the image of suburban perfection, or an inability to speak your truth. What are the places of shame from which we hide ourselves and others? We don't really like going there, do we? Raise your hand if you do. I'm not surprised. It feels vulnerable and unnerving, maybe even deadly, to open ourselves up in that way. We want to hide from such places, to cover them up. I think about the woman who was interviewed for Eve Ensler's Vagina Monologues, talking about her down there as a boarded up basement. She says, "It's very damp, clammy. You don't want to go down there. Trust me, you'd get sick, suffocating, very nauseating. The smell of the clamminess and the mildew and everything, phew, smells unbearable. It's closed up under the house. It's down there." This is the same instinct that Martha shows in today's gospel story, when Jesus goes to open the tomb of her brother Lazarus. Even though she believes that transformation is possible with Jesus, Martha doesn't want to face the very real aromas of decay. She tells him, "Lord, already there is a stench because he's been dead 4 days." But Jesus doesn't fear going into the places of death. His mission is one of throwing open doors, spreading curtains wide, lifting windows, and letting purifying light come in. This is the path of healing, through facing vulnerabilities and coming out the other side. Such love leads us to face the truth of death, then leads through death to life itself. As the very wise Elaine Kirkland once told me, talking about this text, we have to be willing to stink to rise again. This dynamic happens not just at the time of death, but also throughout life. Jesus promises Martha, "Your brother will rise again." And she replies, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." And Jesus says back, "I am the resurrection and the life." Now, a study Bible will note in footnotes, they'll sometimes point out that some ancient copies of John's gospel leave off the second part of Jesus' reply here. In a workingpreacher.org podcast, Rolf Jacobson suggests that later biblical scribes perhaps thought Jesus was being redundant, since, of course, resurrection means life. So copiers occasionally put down just the first part, "I am the resurrection." But that misses the point of this story. It misses the point of Jesus, and it perhaps misses the whole of the Christian message. Yes, we believe that by some mystery beyond our knowing, there is life after the grave, where the love of God can be known, and we will be known and embraced fully, absolutely, forever. But Lazarus is healed to this life, restored to himself here and now, to his family, to his community, in this life. Jesus shows the power of God to make a way where there seems to be no way, not just in the hereafter, but also in the here and now. We are given glimpses of life, even in the midst, even in the face of death, even before the final curtain, and even before the even more final eternal encore, resurrected life. Now, this is the part of the sermon where I'm tempted to tell a heartwarming story that demonstrates the gospel's hopeful rebirth. Maybe a reference to spring would be in order, witnessing the new buds of this season after deadly winter. There are places for such stories and metaphors, but I suspect that it's a shortcut to tie everything up in ribbons and bows. Most of us are all too aware of our shameful places and stinky death, yet still hope and grope for a life of gospel promise, which is harder to see than our own shortcomings. The story of another's resurrection may not be enough for you in your place of hurt or shame or loss. So we continue on the road of love together through death to new life. But we don't always have it figured out in time for Sunday morning, not even your preacher. So if you came to church this past week and found my door mostly closed, or found me less able to engage in undistracted conversation, it's by no means a judgment on you or what we were talking about. It's me trying to dig through my piles, trying to find some organizing in the chaos, trying to find the way from darkness into light. With you, I too am trying to receive the love of God that passes all understanding, love that leads through death to a greater and longer lasting life. Trying to understand grace in the way the UCC theologian Paul Tillich describes it, accepting that we are accepted by God despite feeling our own inadequacies. By divine grace, we don't have to do any of this ourselves, which is why we're here this morning. Mary and Martha had Jesus and the whole community to help them make sense of their loss. We have one another here, in this community of mystery, of wonder, and of hope. The church is Christ's ever-living body from then until now, for this time and place, with one another, likewise called to cry out for life in places and situations of death. As we all continue to listen for a space of grace in places of shame or loss, we together manifest for one another the voice of Jesus into the tomb. Unbind him and let him go. Part of our joyful calling as Christians is to stand athwart those entangling inner voices or outer critics and cry out, stop. Death is not the last word, not ever and not now in this life. So unbind him and let him go. Unbind her and let her go. Unbind them and let them go, whoever they are. Unbind me and let me go. Unbind our communities, tied up as we are in gun violence and racism and division of all kinds. Unbind us and let us go. Unbind our neighborhoods, our communities. Unbind our nation. Unbind the world. Unbind this whole groaning and God-blessed creation, so that it and all who live within it are set free to new life. Unbind us, loving God, and let us go.